Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast.
Today's guest is Mr. Chris Gunnan, head of St. Stephen's Episcopal School. Thank you for your time, and let's jump right into the questions.
Terrific.
Could you briefly explain your role as headmaster at St. Stephen's?
Sure. So I am in the seventh year as head of school at St. Stephen's Episcopal School. We're a independent school in Austin, Texas, with about 700 students from grade 6 through 12. 185 of those students are boarding students that come from Texas and states across the country, as well as 20 different nations. So I am responsible for making sure that the school fulfills its mission. So I oversee about 240 employees, and we have about a $37 million annual operating budget. So my charge is to make sure that we hire the right people and have the right resources to provide the students here at St. Stephen's with an incredible experience from 6th through 12th grades.
And could you talk about some of the other roles that are available within teaching administration?
Sure. So on our senior administrative team, we have a head of the upper school, a head of the middle school, a head chaplain, a director for enrollment management, which is admissions and financial aid. We have a chief financial officer who oversees our business and facilities operations. We have a director of advancement who oversees fundraising and community engagement. And we have a director of equity and inclusion who supports all of our programming and ongoing education around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So those are, you know, the eight or nine senior leadership positions at the school. Of course, we also have an international program director, a boarding program director, an athletic director, head of our dining operations, head of security, a chief marketing and communications officer. So there are about 24 different leadership positions, from mathematics, science, English department chairs, to deans of students, to athletic directors, to, you know, folks who oversee different parts of the operations of the campus.
How did you prepare yourself for a career in education administration? What are some of the qualifications that are required, and what made you choose a career in private schools over public schools?
Oh, great. Well, when I was in high school, I had incredible faculty, incredible teachers that just had a profound impact on my life. And so I was initially drawn to teaching, and started my career and did my college and graduate work in education. So I got a bachelor's of arts in English at Trinity University with the intent of teaching English. I stayed one more year and one more summer and completed a master's of arts in teaching program. And with that master's of arts in teaching program came a certification to teach public schools in Texas. So I really started my career as an English teacher, as a cross-country coach, a track and field coach. I sponsored some clubs, sponsored the student council, sponsored the discipline council, served as an advisor, and served primarily as a teacher and coach for the first 5 to 7 years of my career. But in that time, began to become a little bit more interested in school leadership and school administration. And really, I've had very little formal academic training in school leadership. Most of my training has come through conferences and workshops and finding great mentors and asking them a lot of questions and reading a lot of books. But I haven't had any formal education in school administration or school leadership.
You mentioned your interest in teaching came from some of your experiences in high school and beyond. What were some of the other options that you considered, and what made you ultimately decide that over all of those that teaching would be the right thing for you?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. When I was a senior in high school, I was considering also becoming a psychologist. So I looked at a program at Emory University and had a chance to go there. And it really came down to deciding to do, you know, teaching in the Master's of Arts teaching program at Trinity University or studying psychology at Emory. And if I'm honest, I think I could just get my head wrapped around teaching a little easier. I had seen lots of great teachers. I knew the impact that they could have in young people's lives. And even in high school, you know, I did some things like serving as a camp counselor and taught some study skills classes and some SAT classes. So I just think I had seen teachers, and I could just wrap my head around doing that kind of work a little bit more quickly than I could wrap my head around other fields. And interesting, I feel really grateful. I feel in some ways like I happened into this work. You know, sometimes you look back 25 years later in your life and you wonder why you made some of the decisions that you did. And I'm at a point in my life where I'm just incredibly proud and blessed and fortunate to have done the work that I've done and to have some of the leadership opportunities that I've had.
Could you briefly talk about how a typical work day or work week looks like for you? Some of the daily responsibilities and maybe the number of hours or neat weekend or holiday work that you have to complete?
Sure. It's hard to describe a typical day because there just aren't too many typical days. There's a lot of different kinds of work that I do. Some of the work is with our board of trustees. So our school is overseen by 24 board members. There's a lot of work that happens at that level in terms of setting strategic priorities, setting and establishing and reviewing the budget, making sure that the campus facilities are appropriate, raising money for different kinds of projects. So there's a lot of work that heads of schools do directly with boards of trustees. And that's one really great kind of work. But, you know, in a school day, I may speak in chapel or have meetings with other senior leadership members just on projects that we're working on. There are four or five people that I meet with each week: the chief financial officer, the director of advancement, and our chief marketing and communications officers. We have standing meetings every week just because there are projects that we're regularly needing to work on. But really, a day could include, you know, sitting down with a student who's struggling, or meeting with parents who have questions or concerns, planning events with parents, planning events with other administrators. A day might include welcoming prospective students and prospective families to the school and spending time talking with them about who we are and what we do. It also can include going to events with members of our community and building community and some strategic work. It could involve visiting classes, you know, attending sports competitions, seeing our students compete or seeing our students perform and just being present in the community. A lot of the work is relationship building and telling the story of the school, telling everyone in the community. You know, I think my favorite role, or one of my favorite roles, is being the primary storyteller of the school. So making sure that people understand what our core values are, what our mission is, what our vision, and helping people see ways that they can continue to make the school a stronger and even better place.
And you brought up relationship building, which is across like any profession, that's
right,
pretty important. It can be often more important than the actual technical skills themselves. So what are some habits or practices that you've put into place to sort of like master that?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the most profound experiences I had was working with a woman named Donna Hicks, who's a conflict resolution expert at Harvard University. And she does some incredible work around the concept of dignity. And her foundational belief is that every human being has inherent value, that we are born in the image of God, that we're irreplaceable, but that every human being also has inherent vulnerabilities, that we can be harmed or we can be hurt, we can feel marginalized, we can feel devalued. And so her work really centers around, how do we serve as dignity agents for one another? How can we honor the dignity of people that we come into contact with, that we're in relationship with, that we're in community with? And what are some of the either intentional or unintentional ways that we violate other people's dignity? And so her work has really been meaningful to me, especially as a leader of an Episcopal school. In the Episcopal faith, before individuals are welcomed or received into the church, the last question that they're asked is, do you honor Christ in all people and commit to serving and promoting justice in the world? And the idea of honoring Christ in all people is recognizing that every human being is sacred and every human being is a reflection of God's beauty on earth. So the dignity work has been really powerful in my life. A lot of times my work calls me to resolve conflicts between faculty members, between a student and a faculty member, between a parent and a faculty member, and using some of Donna Hicks' dignity models and definitions has really helped me quite a bit. And I would suggest that work is really applicable beyond schools, that anyone, as you said, any leadership position depends on one's ability to work well with people and develop meaningful trusting relationships. And so her definitions, you know, are applicable to world leaders as well as school leaders.
You talked about how like being an ambassador or representative of your school is one of your favorite aspects of the job, but what is your least favorite aspect of the job? What are some of the challenges that you experience in this profession?
Sure. You know, I think any leader in a community is called to walk with people during vulnerable times. You know, if an employee is underperforming or has made a significant mistake, and I'm called to work with that employee or colleague. And certainly in schools, when students make difficult mistakes, or when anyone in the community is going through a period of crisis or trauma. So it's, I want to be clear and say that that's meaningful work. It's important work in this role, but it's emotional work, right? Because sometimes, you know, if somebody loses a family member or is suddenly and seriously ill or is just going through a difficult time in their lives, a lot of times that impacts how we live in this community. And so that's difficult work. I think in schools especially, there's difficult, every school leader now is thinking about safety and security on campuses. And that can be when there are security concerns, just because of the weight of the responsibility of keeping a community safe, that can be really challenging and hard. You know, and then anytime there are legal issues and the stakes become pretty high, that can be challenging work. And sometimes one of the interesting things is, you know, St. Stephen's is 75 years old, and sometimes things emerge that happened long before I got here, but haven't been addressed yet and need to be addressed. So that work can be difficult, but I care about the school and the community and know that that work needs to be done. And I know that that's what I signed on for as head of school. But sometimes those are the things that keep me up at night or make me lose sleep, just because you want to get it right. You want to serve the community well, even in those really difficult moments.
That's a good point, especially since sort of the headmaster is like the guardian of the school itself. So based on the knowledge that you have today, if you could go back to your high school or college years, would you do anything differently, like maybe focusing on one area over another, or maybe developing some skills that you did not deem important at the time, or working with professors or mentors or reaching out with them, or anything along those lines?
You know, that's a great question. And I don't know that I have an answer for what I would do differently. I think what I have is an appreciation for, in high school, I developed a love of learning and some habits around learning and some discipline with respect to scholarship and learning. And why I speak to that is there's really not a playbook for the kinds of skills or the kinds of expertise you have to develop, but you need to be a lifelong learner. So, you know, for example, I'll tell you, 3 years ago, I didn't know a lot about global health. I didn't know a lot about pandemics. I didn't know a lot. But when you're the caretaker or carekeeper of a community of 700 people and students and 200 employees and all of their families, and there's a global pandemic, then you find yourself finding experts, reading as much as you can, looking for the best, most accurate information, filtering out all the misinformation, and building teams of experts to help solve complex problems. So I've had time, you know, I started as an English major and as a teacher. And now part of what I love about my job is if we're doing a construction project on campus, all of a sudden I find myself learning a lot about construction schedules and construction timelines and construction costs and how many people and how to get the right people on the team to do the work. Or when there's a global pandemic, you find yourself figuring out the difference between a surveillance test and a diagnostic test and when to use each kind of test and how to use the tools you have at your access to keep the community safe. So I don't know that I would have done differently other than I have this appreciation that, you know, in high school and college, you learn how to learn and you don't have any idea at that time in your life where you're going to need to apply that sense of scholarship and discipline. But as long as you develop it, you'll find yourself, you know, learning what you need to know to do a good job.
Without going into specifics, one factor to certainly consider in any profession is compensation. So how does compensation look just in general for
sure,
maybe the different points in your career? So maybe as a teacher and then now.
Yeah. You know, compensation models look different in different types of schools. I've spent my entire career in independent schools, and there's actually a pretty wide spectrum of what people make in different positions in independent schools. I think typically teachers now probably make between $50,000 and $100,000. Other administrators can make between $100,000 and $200,000, sometimes up to $250,000. And heads of schools in our region can make from $300,000 to $50,000 annually. There are some other things to think about for sure in terms of compensation. So for example, I mentioned that my school is a boarding school or has a boarding element to it. So it's part of my contract. I'm required to live on campus. That actually means it's free housing for me. So it's a benefit and a pleasure. It means that I'm living within the community full time, which is something, while at times it can be tricky and tiring, it's 99% of the time, it's really energizing. So I think that's a little bit of information in terms of salary, but then also there are other benefits to think about, especially in boarding schools that can be pretty meaningful. I get to eat in the dining hall 3 days a week, seven days a week, three times a day, if I like. And that's part of my compensation or the nature of my job. So
in your view, what kinds of personalities or what are some crucial skills in this profession?
Oh, great question. I think tireless work ethic. The day doesn't start at 8, certainly doesn't end at 5. And the week is not a 5-day work week. So a deep dedication and tireless work ethic. Again, I mentioned earlier, being a lifelong learner, I'm always learning, whether that's how to manage a $37 million budget or how to raise money with a donor. What are new ideas in terms of child development or learning that we need to implement in our school? And I'm going to say hope. I think at my core, I'm a hopeful person. And I think that in this kind of community, being a leader who believes that we can create a better world, that we can heal some of the brokenness of the world by learning how to science and technology and math and world languages and politics, but also just in learning how to live in close community and how to treat one another. So at the end of the day, I think school leaders need to have a strong sense of hope that we can build a better world, and inviting students and young people who are willing to work hard and willing to engage in that work is a pretty essential skill.
What advice do you have for someone who's in high school or college thinking about maybe becoming a teacher or continuing down that path and becoming more on the administrative side?
Yeah. General advice. Yeah. I don't know too many school leaders who started out in school administration. And I think that I have more credibility as a leader with my faculty because I taught for the first and coached and advised and sponsored clubs for the first 7 or 10 years of my career. So I think really beginning one's career as a classroom teacher has value. And then, the ability to find mentors who you respect and who you admire and to develop a relationship with mentors is an incredibly beneficial tool. And again, I know there are plenty of school leaders who've gone back to graduate schools in education to get PhD in school leadership. But my work has been full enough and my days have been full enough. I've gotten enough job on the job training that hasn't been essential for my career. It may still at some future time. I think that one piece of advice I would give is that to be an effective school leader, you've got to be all in. And to be all in, you've just got to fall in love with the community and have a belief that that community is going to position young people for meaningful lives. So I think that would be my suggestion. Start teaching. And if you love it, look for other ways to have a bigger impact on a school community.
You mentioned those, like looking for other ways to have a more meaningful impact on your school community. What are some of those like different opportunities that might present themselves, and what is the best way to capitalize on those for someone who's looking to join the more administrative side after maybe some teaching years?
Yeah. I remember really early on in my career when I was a classroom teacher and coach and advisor, and I was at a class meeting and one of our students did something that was inappropriate and out of bounds. And I was not the dean of students at that time necessarily, but I observed something that was inappropriate. And I began to challenge and confront that situation, not confront in a confrontational way, but have a conversation and lean into that work. So it's looking for things that may not fall under one's immediate job definition or job description, but communities are full, communities are complex, and sometimes the right person to address the situation isn't there at the moment. So being willing to step into that you know, every classroom teacher has an opportunity to begin to do some discipline work. It's difficult work. It's uncomfortable work. But I found myself as a classroom teacher, you know, having situations where I needed to address a plagiarism issue. And so that then became kind of a natural step into serving as an assistant head of upper school, where the discipline piece was, you know, more central and more vocal part of what I did. And then as an assistant head of upper school, I found myself in senior administrative teams meetings and being able to contribute to areas, you know, and be a part of the success of the school and areas that were beyond my immediate job definition. So I think it's just showing up and having a great attitude and be willing to have an impact, go above and beyond in any current role. I've had some colleagues who say, you know, wherever you are in an administrative ladder, try to perform a level above. And then that way, when there becomes an opening, people making a hiring decision don't have to use their imagination. Maybe they've seen you doing that kind of work, even when you weren't assigned to it, and maybe more likely to invite you into that opportunity.
I know this might not apply that much to private schools, but are there some sorts of licensing or continuing education requirements for heads of school, or more on the administrative side than like teachers?
Yeah. So that I am not required to do any ongoing certification as a head of an independent school. We do have an accreditation process that a school goes through every 10 years. We're part of the ISAS, which is the Independent Schools Association of the Southwest. So every 10 years, our school is evaluated by this outside organization. But as an individual, I don't need to be certified or go through continuing education. Now, I mentioned earlier that I have a board of trustees of 24 folks, and they're one of their two or three responsibilities of a board of trustees is to hire and supervise a head of school. So I feel like I've got 24 bosses in some ways. And I don't say that kind of jokingly, but 24 people to whom I am accountable and who are making sure that I'm the right person and doing the right work. And certainly from time to time, I've got a great board of trustees and great board presidents. And we've identified areas that I need to grow or areas of my professional life that I need to strengthen. But it's not ongoing hours of continuing education. That happens pretty naturally and pretty fully in my work.
Do you have any final thoughts or comments to share before we end this podcast?
I would just say thank you for the opportunity, and certainly encourage folks who are interested in school leadership to explore that. I'm happy to make myself available. Folks listen, they're welcome to reach out to me by email or a phone call. I would just say I feel on a daily basis that I'm doing the work that I'm called to do, that I'm incredibly lucky and fortunate to be able to serve the community that I serve. It certainly is hard work, but I'm at a time in my life when I want to do hard work. So thank you for your time and for your great questions, and just want to wish all the listeners all the best luck in their work.
And thank you for the great advice and for your time as well. I really appreciate it.
It's been an honor to be a part of this process. So thanks.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out pathfinder101.com for more information like this. Thanks again, and have a great rest of your day.